So I like literally like yesterday and even this morning, I was like on TikTok just watching all these like hilarious.
Dude, it's a black hole. I can't watch TikToks.
What's up, everyone? It's Andrew Bermudez, co-founder and CEO of Digzy. If you want to dual lend more deals on your commercial real estate properties, go to getdigzy.com and sign up. You can start listing for free. I've got my wonderful co-host, Bucky and Natalie.
What's up, everybody?
So Natalie, can you tell us a little bit about yourself in like less than like two letters? I'm kidding. You can just tell us something that.
Two letters.
ABC, you always be closing.
I'm like, there you go. So I'm over at Logic Commercial. I'm a vice president in the tenant rep division with a focus on office and flex tenants in the Las Vegas market.
Sweet. Bucky, your turn.
Commercial real estate agent, and I'm trying to become TikTok famous.
Yeah, and actually, if you're not following Bucky on TikTok, it's awesome. I do have one request. You need to wear that hamburger t-shirt all the time, man. It's not even a t-shirt, just like a shirt, that hamburger shirt.
I ask you that every show. Bucky, wear the shirt, please.
All right, sounds good. Dude, it's the most delicious shirt I've ever seen in my life.
I love that.
I show up to an appointment, and I'm wearing the hamburger shirt for the first time, and they've never met me before. So that's what I got. I got to bring a couple shirts to the office.
Dude, next year I'm inviting you to my 40th, and I'm going to pay for your flight along with Natalie's. And if that shirt's not being worn, literally I will lock you in the closet for the rest of the night.
Oh, my God.
It's pretty bad. That's how much I want that shirt. Well, we have wonderful guests here. We have Brittany with Cressa. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm working in the West Los Angeles market. I've been in real estate for about 8 years, and I specialize in office space with a focus on tech and media tenants.
Awesome. Thank you for that. And we have the amazing Vicky Lee, who is an expert in flexible office space solutions. So what's up, Vicky?
Yeah. Hi, everybody. Very nice to meet you guys. So just a little bit about myself. So we are a flexible office space solution company. So based in San Francisco, and, you know, two years ago, we also expanded to LA area. So, you know, in California, we have 8 locations, including 6 in the Bay Area, 2 in the LA area. And so we actually are specializing helping fast growing tech companies, you know, to kind of like move into a ready to move in office space, and also provide our flexible management services to the companies who doesn't have to, you know, use their current office space.
So thank you for that, Vicky. So let's address the big elephant in the room, right? What the fuck happened to WeWork, man? $47 billion?
I know.
It's not. Come on, Natalie. We're all in commercial real estate. We're all adults. You're really going to fault me for making the F word?
I'm not, but that's my client. So I'm going to steer clear of this entire conversation.
Oh, you work with WeWork.
I'm going to duck underneath my desk.
Oh, this is getting edited out. All right.
You.
So how about those other people? I'm just kidding. So anyway, so that's an interesting thing, right? That's actually pre-COVID that this whole thing happened when they try to go public. But at the same time, it's actually put a little bit of a sting on the co-working solution. So what are you noticing out there, Brittany? As far as like, when are people even talking about co-working? Does it have a stigma? Like, what are you seeing out there?
Right now, it does have a stigma. I think most people, when this happened, because everyone was watching WeWork and potentially that it was, you know, they were doing terribly, they messed up their IPO. And then when COVID came down, it just kind of accelerated a lot of natural processes that were already occurring, like with retail as well, that was going through a big transition. But right now, I think most folks are, everyone that could cancel those agreements did, because they had short-term agreements, flexible agreements, and so they were particularly vulnerable to a crisis like this. And so you just saw tenants exiting en masse. They've got tenants, you know, filing suits against them and all this kind of stuff going on right now. So I think that the flexible workspace will survive, obviously, because it does provide a really creative solution for clients that don't want to commit to a long-term, but they're going to have to really take a look at what their customer needs to feel safe.
And Vicky, you kind of like lie right in that line where somebody might consider you co-working, right? So kind of what have you seen? Like, is it the fact that, is it really the COVID thing where like people are afraid to, you know, sit next to each other, and they kind of think like, oh, cooties, you know, I'm going to be sitting around people, I want to be safe? Or is it much more, hey, why do you laugh, Natalie? You always laugh at the stuff I say.
Because you said cooties. I'm a
I'm going to get back into it. You make me chuckle. You and Bucky are the best. I love you guys. So, Vicky, is it the COVID thing, or is it like people looking at WeWork and some of that shade, like going to the co-working spaces? I mean, right. I'm sure that like you being more of a flex provider, you kind of get coupled into that, into that
yes.
co-working pool. Can you, is it COVID, or is it just like the shade that, you know, of somebody's downfall?
Right. So thank you so much for that question. That actually a question that I have been thinking for almost a year. So definitely, you know, this is prior to COVID. It's not something new. So, you know, if we just, you know, look into a co-working space, there are, you know, company like WeWork where, you know, they spend majority of their money on community building. So, you know, community is very expensive. So, you know, they constantly hosting a lot of fancy events, you know, they provide beer, like they provide wine, they provide all those happy hours for free. So everything is really, you know, just kind of the cost comes towards the community. So community is very, very, very expensive. And what's more challenging is how can we monetize that, right? So there is, you know, is it valuable in terms of brand reputation? Yes, for sure. Everybody, not everybody, but, you know, at least, you know, people in commercial real estate, all of them, they know exactly what co-working space is, where they know exactly what WeWork is. So that's definitely, you know, the money well spent on educating commercial real estate brokers and also tenants about, you know, what is co-working and who WeWork is. On the other side, you know, there is great co-working space companies such as Spaces or Regis, IWG, right? Those kind of companies. So, you know, they didn't really spend that much of money on community building. You know, they don't really offer free events, or they don't really offer, you know, those kind of like free amenities for use. Rather, you know, they charge a lot, like for every use of meeting rooms, they charge something extra. For every copies you print, they also charge something extra. So this is actually definitely, you know, very, very different. You know, start about almost a year ago, you know, we kind of like constantly spending. So one of the time that I kind of like stopped thinking, like, what do I want to do? Because I am like, to be honest, I'm also confused. Like if I continue, you know, making a lot of like wonderful events happening and then, you know, to really kind of like spend a lot of money on community, but is my company still able to survive? Is there any way that I actually can find a way to monetize our product? The question is, it's challenging. And then the other side of it is we don't really want it to be like a property management-ish kind of company or, you know, just pure facility management company. We charge every penny on top of our clients, because that's really not what the market was looking for. Not really, you know, that's just something has to change. And then apparently, you know, so I think COVID is only accelerate the market's understanding on really helping flexible office space providers to really realize that, you know, the tenants or the potential clients in the co-working space industry today, what their need. So, you know, it's definitely a change from a community-based where, you know, basically it's a market that WeWork has spent a lot of money on, and then to like a transition of helping the tenants realize that, you know, for doesn't matter if we wanted to call co-working space or flexible office-based providers, basically the tenants are looking for a service kind of like based solutions, you know, helping their companies to, you know, get into the right track in term of workspace management. Yeah, so totally, you know, that's what I think COVID is really the momentum that accelerates the realization from, you know, a community sense to a more kind of like efficient a service sense. So that's really what I kind of like look at the current co-working space industries.
So let's talk about this, because in this podcast, we talk a lot about marketing and lead generation strategies and tools and things that you can do, little hacks here and there to kind of, you know, draw in more tenants, more buyers to either put in your properties or represent. Now, when you're doing all this community events, like what, I'm sure that's great for branding and exposure. You know, a friend brings a friend and, you know, next thing you know, they're by the kegerator drinking beer and they go, oh, I need space. I'm going to go to this particular company, right? Or this space, let's just call it ABC space. what is really the solution? Like, why are they attracted to that? Were they attracted because of the community building, or is it more because, oh, I can just rent the desk, or I can rent more desk, or I get to hang out with my buddies? Like, have you been in the industry of flexible space? Like, have you really nailed down kind of like the one to two, maybe three, like, levers of what, like, that's really the value proposition for these, you know, tenants that occupy these spaces? Like, what really is the value proposition, or what they consider valuable mm-hmm. to themselves? Is it the community? Is it the flexibility? Like, what really is it like? I'd like to know, you know, the number one, like the thing that everybody says, and then the next thing, and then if there's a third thing there. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, sure. I would like to say that there are two levels of, you know, community engagement. So one is, you know, really help the decision maker. Normally it's the CEO, or, you know, is the CFO of the companies, right? So when they actually look into office-based solution, especially, you know, in a co-working space industry or flexible office space industry, so they are constantly looking for two type of things. One is the service that I already mentioned. The other one is the add-on value community. What do you have? So for One Piece Work, because, you know, we have 10 locations globally, like we have 8 in the States, we also have 2 in China. So our value proposition is really, you know, helping a lot of like Chinese clients, you know, enter US correctly and also efficiently. So, you know, TikTok is also one of our clients, actually. So, you know, we're actually helping them. We actually didn't provide the workspace solution to them. We actually provided consultancy solutions to them. So, you know, like that's really on top of the workspace solution, but it's more about go to market entry kind of like analysis on helping, you know, a lot of like Chinese companies really understand the demands of local US market. And also, you know, hopefully by connecting them to the right resources to help them accelerate the the go to market entry faster. You know, companies also vice versa, like Lineback is also our largest client. We actually help them to launch their office space in Shenzhen, which is in China. So that is also, you know, just on top of One Piece Work, what is our value proposition from that approach? And then the other level of, you know, community events is like engagement is more about like the community events to increase retention rate for the talent by itself. So these people, they are not necessarily decision making, like makers to actually, you know, to make decisions whether they wanted to work in this office or not, because, you know, eventually it's just the company's decision. However, what we can do, you know, by, you know, connecting the tenants in here or talents in the space is really, you know, by one, continue throwing, you know, social events to really figure out, you know, what kind of things they need. For example, Santa Monica, we did a bunch of, you know, social events such as speed dating, apparently become one of the most beautiful kind of like, or how to say that, attractive events locally. However, we did that in Silicon Valley. It's like the vibe is not as much, you know, we figure out that, yeah. So the people are different, like Santa Monica, you know, everybody is in a kind of like entertainment industry versus in Silicon Valley, almost everybody is coming from engineering industry. Then you probably wanted to throw different kind of events to really engage those people together. And then, you know, we change topic to something like more kind of like advanced in term of technology. And then we actually get great feedback from our talents in the space. Like people are just, you know, kind of crazy about what's the future of technology is going to be. And then what about what's going on with the investment world and things like that. So, you know, all this kind of type of events is really to just engage the talents and then to build trust in among those talents to make sure like they trust our community. They feel happy to come into our space every day. They wanted to stay with that company they're working for longer.
Natalie, you talk to tenants all day long. So like, what are some of the drivers you see from people wanting to go to like a co-working space or a flexible type setup?
Just flexibility, being able to pop in and out. So let's say like in a WeWork model where they're in multiple markets, being able to go in and out and use the space. Obviously the culture vibe that it gives, the amenities that are inside, the ability to have a conference room and invite people to your space. And there's a big open kitchen and fresh tea. And so just really the flexibility would be the main thing. And then the amenities and everything else would be the second. And just being, it's almost like it's a cool trend to be in co-working space. I have friends that pride themselves even though they're best friends, a tenant rep office broker, that they are in, you know, they're in their co-working space, and then there's synergy there, right? You're with other entrepreneurs. There's a chance to really network and grow your brand. And but those are the main movers. I don't have a lot of clients that are looking for that. I don't know about you, Brittany, but do you have a lot of clients that come to you and say that they're looking at co-working?
I think the most often that I'm looking at co-working with a client is when they're not sure about their needs in a certain market and they want to dip their toe in. And the term is a big factor. I would say that's the top factor, because when you go into co-work, you're paying a premium. So it has to be worth it for some reason or another. And most often that is to not commit to a big lease term and decrease the overall office liability in that way. It depends on whether we're talking about a company or just a small group of employees. And now it's more common for companies to hire remotely in other cities. So they may just have a couple employees that need an office in any given city or one. And co-working makes a really great solution for that scenario. You know, I think the other thing that can be really good is, though you're paying a premium, you're paying just for the space that you use. Often you're paying per head. So if your employee count changes, then your costs go down. So that can be very attractive.
That's a really good point. Yeah. And do you find that you're actually taking people out of co-working as opposed to putting them into it, because they've discovered the market, they've done their research, they know where they want to be, and so we move them into permanent space? Or do you find that as well?
Yes. That can be the case. Sometimes they may keep a small membership at the co-work place because they like the culture and the amenities, but then, you know, they open up their flagship office because they want the face of their company, they want the headquarters. You know, the private office solution in WeWork, I think, is a really interesting case right now, because a lot of folks that had a lock on their doors, if something does happen to WeWork and it, you know, they are restructured and all that kind of stuff. So we have a lot of clients that are looking to protect their space right now because they are in a co-work space and they're not feeling great about their landlord. So it's interesting. There's so many different cases, I think, which is one of the reasons why WeWork has been so successful, because it checks a lot of boxes for a lot of different people. And that community that Vicky's talking about is so critical. And people love that ability to network when they go into the office. One of the things I think that One Piece does so well, though, is they've really found their niche community in the Chinese entrepreneurial market. And I know they've got big name companies in there. You've got, don't you have Alibaba's in China and here?
Yeah,
and you've got a few big companies in there that you've been able to really carve out this niche. And so WeWork has this, you know, much broader scope, I would say, in that regard, which can be good, but maybe in a more scaled down version, actually, more boutique co-working setups like One Piece will actually prevail. We'll see.
I'm sorry, Vicky. I just want to ask Bucky. What's the co-working and flexible market like in Rochester?
So being home of the Mayo Clinic, we have what I'll call an accelerator that Mayo had started for doctors to have a place where they can start a company, and it's connected to the Mayo Clinic. So that was more of a local city and Mayo combined effort to create that on a smaller scale. It's probably 2,000 square feet plus or minus. And then we had a small startup in a garage called The Cube, which eventually developed into what's called Collider. And that's more just hot desks, if you will. You can come in, you can get a dedicated desk for $350 a month, or you can have this day pass where you come and go. And then myself personally, I just created I'll call it executive suite in downtown Rochester, close to Mayo Clinic. It's 7 offices. I'm in one of the offices right now, and I've had it now for about 2 years. We're not 100% full. I think it just shows that in these smaller markets, it's a good idea. And I really enjoy our space for the fact that I have a media company down the hall and a loan officer and people that understand the benefits of being downtown and having a reasonable rent, but it's not as popular in a smaller market as it is in a bigger market. I do see that it takes longer time to fill up spaces.
So let's talk about this. So we're making this transition where you have co-work and everybody packed. Like, it sounds like community is a big, big thing that attracts people. Networking, having, you know, kind of having these serendipitous meetings with, you know, the media company down the hall. But really what I'm seeing is I'm seeing a change in, as I'm speaking with people, where it goes between just co-working and being all of those community things, even though it seems like it's still critical, to being much more of a flexible provider, where it means I'm seeing more and more companies say, as opposed to you sharing a desk or having just a small part of an office, is actually chopping up a big chunk of office, let's say like 5,000 feet, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 feet. I know that Vicky, that One Piece has some of these big spaces that you guys are marketing as turnkey spaces for these companies that are unsure what's going to happen with COVID, and they need a short-term solution, right? Whether their lease is expiring or whether they're downsizing, et cetera. So can you shed a little bit of light? I'd like to hear from you, Vicky, and then I'd like to hear from Brittany as well, to kind of see, you know, the broker perspective of these emerging, it almost seems like it's almost like an evolution of co-working going into a more traditional flexible space solution for tenants. And I'm interested to see what the pressures on landlord on natural landlords as well, since.
Right. So here is what I thought, you know, so under the co-working space name, there are two type of things. One is called shared space. The other one is a flexible workspace solution. So, you know, for shared space, so today, if we look into the market around us, you know, there are like all kind of like shared workspace, they call themselves co-working space, right? So basically, it's a product that people all come together and then they share the public space where they share the office space that they're using. And then there is flexible, you know, workspace. So that's really what we are doing. Like, we have multiple locations, but if we just actually pick out, let's say, One Piece Work San Francisco by itself, if they don't have any other like further locations, you know, I only wanted to call it the shared workspace. Because flexible workspace, it's a package of all the possibilities that you have. And all that together is actually a solution, what is called flexible office space. So there are tenants in the market, they are looking for not only just one office solution for that one local market, rather, you know, they're looking for a really kind of like a flexible workspace solutions that can cater the needs for their talents to be able to choose wherever they feel more convenient. So, you know, what I think is, you know, for flexible workspace solutions, we cannot say ourselves, oh, we are a flexible workspace management solution if we only have one location. We have to have multiple locations and then to put it all together as a whole package and then, you know, present to our clients, okay, so you are looking for a workspace solutions for your talents at a distributed area. And then here is, you know, the options that we have. So we actually wanted to engage all this package to you and your clients, I mean, your talents. This is really, you know, what the service is going to be look like, rather than, you know, it's just one dedicated kind of like workspace in that market, like people all coming together to work together. Then that's actually a very different concept.
I want to get clear on this so that the audience really understands this.
Yeah.
Can you give me a use case? So can you walk us through a use case of a company looking for this, like why the package of having several buildings is important to them, and you know what their area looks like? Do they have their own front door? Do they have their own enclosed area? Can you just, let's just say, just grab one of the companies who's gone forward with a flexible solution like that?
Okay, cool. So I'm very happy to use Lineback as an example. So, you know, they started from our San Francisco office. You know, they are one of the most kind of like fast growing tech companies over the past 2 years. So, you know, as they grow out of our San Francisco office, of course, you know, they're too big. We cannot, you know, kind of like take over them as our clients anymore. And then they have to move out. However, you know, for tech companies like them, they're constantly looking for office solutions in different markets that they wanted to enter. You know, so we actually become the flexible office providers to actually help them to launch their team in Santa Monica, in Seattle, and also in Shenzhen. Because this is where, you know, they also wanted to come in. This is where their talents is also going to be at. So, you know, rather than them only wanting to, you know, looking for a space in San Francisco, you know, by working with One Piece Org, like we have multiple locations, we are really catering their needs. You know, we actually offer this entire office space as a product to them or as a service to them to really fulfill their needs. So they don't really have to consider where do we want it to go to, I mean, which office do we want it to pick the next when we actually enter a different market. So, you know, that's also kind of like collaborate our location picking strategy. We don't just randomly, you know, open locations anywhere that we think is suitable. It's more about, you know, because we definitely, you know, the clients we really focus on is fast growing tech companies, you know, eventually cross-border companies. So our location picking strategy is really kind of like following where this company's wanted to go. That's where we wanted to go as well, because we are part of the solutions or services to them.
So basically, it's you're dealing with one vendor, the flex space provider. You need to expand to different markets. They may outgrow your San Francisco facility, but they're looking to expand in Santa Monica or Shenzhen, and you're able to, they're able to go to you, and then you're able to just kind of like turnkey it so they can focus on work, and then your team works with their team to deploy that additional physical real estate for the additional talent that they're hiring.
That's super interesting, Vicky. That's really
Thank
cool.
You.
Look you guys up. I really like that.
And Brittany, I mean,
yeah, I think,
go ahead. Sorry, Vicky, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, I think from the commercial real estate perspective, you know, the way to think of us is more like a global tenant rep for one company. And, you know, so we don't really just focus on the local market, but at the same time, you know, we're really helping you to enter your desired market.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Now, Brittany, what are some of the solutions you're seeing out there outside of One Piece? Like, are you seeing like individual offices, or are you seeing like them just sharing, like they shared a space? Like what are some
of the work in general?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think right now, anybody that had a membership, you know, they've probably canceled it. Anyone that still has it, that might already be in that setup. Folks that are looking for new space right now, I think, especially if they're planning on going back to work anytime soon, prefer to have control over their space.
Okay.
So if they can do that by having a private space in a WeWork, they may consider it. But most of the companies that I'm touring with right now, even a shared sublease makes them nervous. So
and this is because of COVID?
Yes. So okay. I think until that's kind of worked out, and I know right now most companies are putting together their policies and procedures to go back to work, as well as landlords. And we've started to get some of those documents in, but they're just a handful. And it looks like, of course, as we expect, the landlords are working closely with their lawyers to make sure that their plans aren't going to impact any lease provisions and potentially give tenants some kind of a little way out of the lease, whether it's inhibiting access with limiting people on the elevators or requiring people to come in phased entry. So I think that all of those things right now are really at the top of folks' minds. And I think that when we emerge from this, and as we emerge, that co-working providers, and I know Vicky is doing this too, are planning to make their spaces, you know, visibly look safer with all of these different upgrades, whether they're hand sanitizers or touch-free doors or whatever it is to just make people feel more comfortable and safe when they're in these spaces. And once the word gets out and people start to actually feel that way, that it will recover. But I think for the moment, people are a little bit nervous because they just don't know what it's going to look like.
Now, Natalie, Bucky, like why would you guys, in addition to being a solution for the client, of course, because that's the number one thing, but what incentives are these flexible and space providers providing you as a broker to bring a deal in to them?
They have heightened commission splits here in Las Vegas. So the commission is more than you would make on an average lease term in terms of the amount per square foot. But obviously I'd rather do a long-term lease of larger space, but here they do incentivize through just commissions, a heightened split.
Got it. Bucky?
In a small market, at least my experience, there's no incentives. They don't even offer commission.
And really?
For the fact that it's such a small market that people are going to find it if they were to go to Google. And so they don't feel that they have to offer it. And so not to say I wouldn't try personally out of the space that I own and operate, have a master lease on and then sublease spaces. I would offer it. Right. But I don't have, because of the lack of demand, I don't have a lot of brokers knocking at my door. But I think the local community of brokers would definitely recognize it and be happy to compensate them for their time. One thing I was just going to comment, it was unique out of this whole pandemic for our space, is we had a school teacher come to us, and I worked out a deal because one, appreciate the income coming in, even though it wasn't exactly what we were asking, but she could not work from home and she wanted her own dedicated office, and we worked out something in our space. So just something I didn't plan on when we created this space.
That's interesting. That's cool.
Well, thank you for taking care of the teachers too, man. That's really awesome. I believe they're highly underpaid, and I mean, they educate our future leaders, and I just think we need to be doing more for them. So I appreciate that, Bucky.
I agree with you, Andrew. I have to leave everybody. I have a tour. I'm so sorry. I hate to, maybe we can cut this part out. It's great to meet you all. You guys are amazing. It was great to meet you all. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bucky.
Thank you. Bucky, helping that teacher does not mean that you don't have to wear the hamburger shirt later.
Good.
So now that we finally got rid of Natalie, we're able to actually talk trash. So the thing that I wanted to kind of touch on is, Viggy, like, what incentives do you see out there for, here's what I heard. Flex providers get 10%, maybe 15% of their transaction volumes of new tenants through brokers. Does that sound correct?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
And is the majority of your business actually just referral, or is it Google, AdWords? What is it?
So I would say, majority of that it is actually coming from Google. And about 20% of that is actually from brokers, and the rest of us is very organic.
Okay.
So Google definitely works, but if we actually look into the cost that we spend on client acquisition, it's actually not cheap. You know, the keywords are so expensive nowadays, and it doesn't matter if it's like co-working or flexible workspace solutions or, you know, anything related with office space, it's very expensive. And the quality is not as great as you always kind of like expect. If we talk about conversion rate, definitely brokers give us much more qualified leads, and the conversion rate is actually much higher. It's actually three times higher than what Google give us.
Yeah.
So Google only give us volume, but brokers definitely give us qualities.
That's right. Because a broker wouldn't spend their time unless they've pre-screened the, so you've got two screens. Mm-hmm. You already know that a deal will come with financials, et cetera. So that makes sense. Brittany, what about I'm sure that we've kind of like beat this whole thing to death on flexible space. Like for you being a tenant rep broker, like, is there a distinction in your mind? What is flexible space and what is co-working space? Or is that still muddled for you in your mind?
I think I would say it's still muddled. It's because they're by the same, vendor basically are offering these solutions. So we've got some other boutique ones in Santa Monica. Spaces is over here and has a big setup down here in Santa Monica. And then Breather is one that they'll take individual suites and furnish them, upgrade them, and then release them back to a single company or maybe multiple people. And so I think that really falls into that flexible workspace category because it's got the amenities and all that, but they're a single suite. And so if a tenant was leasing space from them and Breather was to go under, then they would just be able to keep their space as is and stay in the building. But yeah, I think they're still pretty muddled.
Vicky, since you're an expert in the space, tell us that if you were talking to a 4-year-old, which I am one, right? Not 44. That's how my mind thinks. What's the difference between flexible space and co-working?
Yeah. So, like I mentioned earlier, co-working space is basically kind of like a community-based space that you focus on, sharing a lot of like amenities with others, but flexible workspace is more, focused on the service perspective. A lot of the times we cannot provide standard service to any clients. Every service needs to be customized. So that is really how I look into the difference between co-working and flexible. So long story short, one is like they deliver standard service as what it is, as we all know. The other one is more like the flexible workspace solutions, more customized, to really, provide a service that fits the needs of the clients.
So does that mean, for example, when you're sharing space, you might have two people in a long desk, right, standing 6 feet apart, or not standing but sitting, unless they've been drinking a little bit too long during the community event. But is the flexible part, does that mean that they have like their own region and a door to their suite? Okay. So one's enclosed in a larger space. The other one is come over here and have COVID with me, right? I'm sure it's not that. On a serious note, it's not, because everybody's taking precautions to make sure that people don't get sick.
For sure. But,
Andrew, so, that's exactly what I was talking about earlier with the folks that are in, you know, flexible workspaces now. Like we work with a lock and a key, and they've got their private office, and those I think will rebound a little quicker and will be easier to refill when tenants are out looking for new space.
So let's talk about this. Like, let's go to the broker side. So thank you for sharing all of that, Vicky. So, I mean, people are saying, is it a right time to cold call prospects? Is it, how do we get in touch with people? Are transactions happening? And you were sharing with us a little bit before this podcast/vlog. We need to pick one thing, Bucky. Is it a vlog? Is it a podcast? What is it?
Can it be everything?
D, all like of the vlog. Above? It's D, all of the above.
It's an interesting time out there. I mean, there are still deals happening, there are still tenants touring, but in far reduced volumes. Everyone's kind of expecting a flood of sublease space to hit the market at some point. We've been tracking it. There's been a negligible uptick, but not anything significant. I have a feeling that that's going to increase a little more over the next few weeks, just talking to other brokers and knowing about a bunch of space that's about to hit the market. There, you know, if people can put off the decisions that they need to make, they are doing it. And in my experience, most landlords are being flexible. I've seen some give as little as a 3-month extension. So if they've got an approaching lease expiration or even an option rate coming up, those tenants are choosing to push that decision out by 6 or 12 months. When hopefully the market is a little more clear and obviously probably more favorable to the tenant. But landlords on the whole know that they need to be flexible. However, they are sticking hard to rates. Most of them don't want to admit quite yet defeat that, you know, that the rent rates are going to go down. Again, most people expect that to happen. When is up in the air, as we've seen from past downturns, and that's really all we have to go on, though COVID is something no one's seen before. You know, it typically takes 12 to 18 months for rents to really bottom out after any kind of a crisis. So, you know, it's interesting out there. And I think it's a safe bet if you can to put off your decisions if you're able to, because making a long-term decision right now is obviously not ideal, and it's pretty difficult to do because we just simply don't know what the market is, and we don't know what a good deal is because, you know, we're just basing it off of yesterday's rates.
So, I mean, being a broker is not for the faint of heart, right? You have to have some risk tolerance. You don't get a salary. You eat what you kill. Transactions at the minimum take 6 months to 8 months, you know, in larger transactions, even longer. It's very rare that you get somebody that closes a deal in 90 days unless it's a sign call, right? How are you, Brittany, right now generating new business so that you can continue to have income during these times?
So I've always been a networker, and, you know, I get a lot of referrals. I'm grateful for that. But I've been working in Santa Monica as kind of my niche for my entire career in real estate. And prior to that, I was at a family office venture capital firm. So I got to see on the flip side what tech companies go through in those early stages to get funded. And I think that really informs obviously the type of client that I like to work with. But for now, I think there's a really huge opportunity in just outreach to the people you know, or people that know people you know, to just get in front of them and talk to them about what's going on. And there are a lot of opportunities to help and advise surrounding this, and just to share knowledge, because as brokers, we have a lot of knowledge about what people are going through. We talk to all these companies that may not be talking to each other, and we can share some of their difficulties and just kind of, you know, strengthen relationships that you have. And I think I said earlier, it's a lot easier right now to get decision makers on the phone. You know, their calls are being forwarded to their cell phones or whatever it is. So it's a good opportunity really to make new connections that are meaningful, I think. And other than that, I know a number of folks have been doing prospecting campaigns and email campaigns, they've gotten mixed results. Most people that I've talked to have had a pretty low response rate for any campaigns that they're doing right now. But personalized outreach has, from what I've heard, been a pretty good bet.
Yeah, I know, for example, the connect rate usually is, on average, you know, these are all statistics, is you get the connect rate on a phone call is 1%, right? So that means you made 99 calls, average phone calls, 7.5 minutes, that's including leaving voicemails, people not picking up. So you can't even make 100 calls in that much. You have to spend several hours or a couple of days making that many calls to get one call back. A lot of commercial real estate professionals we're talking to are reporting that actually, you know, they're calling 10 people, they're getting a hold of 3-4, which is a huge number, right? Bucky and I and Natalie did an episode on how to fish with dynamite for people that can actually benefit from your help. There's like a little thing that I'll send you that video, Brittany. I'll copy you on it to Vicky, but I'll link it in the show notes or in the comments if this is shared via social, on how to basically use this thing to send a personalized email to your network, your prospects, your contacts, advising them what to do during these COVID times. And when they actually open that up, it'll notify you. So that way you can pick up the phone and say, hey, Greg, I noticed that, you know, you were looking at the brochure. You know, do you have any questions? Just wanted to assist. Oh, no, I don't have any questions. Great. But most likely somebody will want an explainer on it. You can actually add your own logo and things like that. So that I'll put the link below so that you guys can access that. That's completely free. Okay. Just feel free to rebrand it. I think you guys will find it really, really valuable. Bucky.
And I agree with you. I just wanted to be clear because it's a lot easier to get them on the phone, and people are being really personal right now. They're talking about their families, their kids, what they're going through with, you know, homeschooling. And so I think that that's another good opportunity, because when people are willing to talk, you know, they remember you if you're able to make that connection.
And Bucky, I mean, you're an anomaly though, because you do freaking professional grade videos and drone videos of properties and TikTok and all that stuff. Like, what's been sort of, without giving away all your secret sauce, I'm just kidding, give it all away. What have you found that has helped you in transaction generation during this time? Is it just simply your network and people know you from social media and just being in a small town, you've done deals with everybody? Or what advice do you have for our audience who are, you know, struggling to generate deals during this time?
I would say right now, with people's attention to the screen, as I'll call it, so whether it's their phone or their computer, that's where I've been dumping more money and resources into Facebook ads and into the professional videos like you speak of that I've had recorded in the past, and now I'm actually just getting it more visible, and that I'm seeing a lot more engagement than I've ever experienced. It's a combination of actually putting money into ad spend and then also just I believe people's attention on the screen during this time. So I am engaging consistently on these platforms. I had a message on Facebook today, a person said, do you have other properties to share? And it came through a Facebook ad. So that's where I'm spending my time and seeing results.
And by the way, Vicky, Brittany, if you guys haven't seen the stuff that Bucky puts out, it is crazy. I'll email it to you. I'll also link it on the show notes and in the comments section if this is shared on social media, because one, you got to start following him on YouTube. Because
apparently, I've been missing out with
he's TikTok. They look, it like literally looks like $1 million listing, Rochester, Minnesota.
Wow. Like
for commercial real estate. It's fantastic. He does great work. So how can somebody get a hold of you, Brittany?
Email, cell phone, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn.
Could you mind sharing your
I will share all of it.
Okay, great. So go ahead and send us that. We'll link it in the show notes. And Vicky, where can they find you and your company?
LinkedIn is the best. I'm on LinkedIn all the time, just as you. I literally can see you every day. So that's great. Yeah.
Fantastic.
And let me also note that Cressa.com, our blog right now, has a lot of great content and white papers for clients. I know most of the firms do, but ours is all tenant focused. And so there's a lot of good content on there for back to work and just planning for your business during this time and things that you can be thinking about. So it's a really good resource for tenants.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, we'll link to that also in the show notes. Thank you all for being here, Bucky. You're amazing, man. It was so good to see you yesterday on the CRE marketing call and then see you again today. You have no idea how much love I have for you, buddy.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, so Brittany, Vicky, thank you so much for attending.
It was a pleasure to meet you all. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Vicky.
See you guys.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Until next time. Bye-bye. Bye.